It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the election draws closer, people across the state are getting inundated with ads and campaign messages as candidates seek to court voters in the final push.
A class at UW-Madison has been watching those ads closely. It's a course about presidential rhetoric taught by Professor Allison Prash from the Communications Department.
Throughout the semester, students have been tracking how the presidential candidates are talking about political issues and framing their messages for different audiences.
Producers Rochelle Wilson and Royce Podestwell went to class to talk to the students about their perspectives as first-time voters. We'll hear from them. And last week, I talked to the professor about her takeaways as the semester and campaign unfold. Allison Prash is Associate Professor of Rhetoric, Politics, and Culture in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. Allison, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is your approach to teaching a class like this about presidential rhetoric when, you know, it's not like an abstract concept, it's actually happening right now?
Well, I would say first and foremost, my goal for students is to help them feel like they can engage in the discourse as informed citizens. So I set it up for them and say, my job here and our job together is to be curious and to seek to learn together. And then throughout the semester, we look at various pieces of discourse. So we start by looking at the candidates' acceptance speeches at the RNC and the DNC, and we start tracing themes and then follow those themes throughout the presidential debates, campaign messaging, even the ads. And, you know, moving up to election day, we're paying really close attention to how both candidates are trying to win over voters in the final days.
Now, we're going to hear some of the voices of your students in just a bit. Big picture, though, you've got a front row seat to a group of young, in many cases, I'm guessing, first-time voters. Tell us a little bit about the students in this class.
Well, in this class, we have 113 students from UW-Madison. And the majority of these are juniors and seniors. And so I think it's really interesting to note, and I think about this a lot in my teaching and my preparation, is that for them, if they're first-time voters in 2024, that means that in the 2016 election, they were 11 or 12. And perhaps the first presidential election they remember, they were 7 or 8 in 2012. And so it's a fascinating opportunity for them to engage in a new way as voters.
Apart from making me feel old, one significant thing there is for many voters, I think, whether they like him or not, Donald Trump was something new and very different than what they were used to in American politics. And this is his third presidential election. This is the norm, I guess, for some of your students.
Well, it is. Again, if you are 11 or 12 in 2016, that is your entire political memory. And so one of the things that I've tried to do throughout the semester is really acknowledge the political force that Donald Trump has been, but also give students examples of previous elections. So we've spent a lot of time thinking about the Reagan campaign, for example, or the Clinton campaign, or even George W. Bush and Barack Obama. So they have a little bit more historical perspective on what campaigns have been like, while also acknowledging the moment in which we're living.
A couple of our producers on Wisconsin Today talked to a bunch of your students. We've got some excerpts from that. I want to start with Violet from Burlington, not the Wisconsin one, Burlington, Vermont, who said she found the candidate's speeches to be lacking in substance. Here's a listen.
Listening to the speeches, it's so crazy to just see how the candidates are using language to just appeal to such specific groups of people. And like, they honestly don't really even say that much in their speeches. It's really just the way they're saying it.
So do you hear this a lot from your students about style versus substance?
We do, and it's something that we've spent a lot of time analyzing. We talk a lot about the various audiences that the candidates are seeking to appeal to, and so some of that comes out in the issues they talk about, whether it's abortion or immigration or the economy. But I think I also see from students overall that they are frustrated by the lack of specifics or lack of clear policy, and we have a lot of conversations about what would that look like for you, what would make you feel more satisfied with the answers, and it's something that the students are really identifying.
Okay, now maybe we'll get that kind of information at a debate. Well, we heard from Anna from Berlin, Wisconsin, and Kendra from Toma. They told us about their experience watching the one presidential debate this year. Here is what they had to say about it.
We did a little watch party of the debate in our floor.
How was that?
We got to see a lot of conflicting views, but I think it was interesting.
There was a lot of yelling at the TV.
Apparently, we don't like debates because they just skirt around the topic. Everybody just wanted to get there and get done with the topic. They were like, can we answer it?
I'm guessing people of all ages might have been yelling at the TV at some point during the debate. Can you talk more about what your class, what your students took away from the debate?
Yeah, well, we watched with great interest and in great detail both snippets from the presidential debate and the vice presidential debate. And what was so fascinating to me is that students, after the fact of the presidential debate between Harris and Trump, they talked a lot about what you just heard expressed, wishing that there were more substantive policy discussions, or also feeling like it was an exercise in how to jab each other, essentially. What I found fascinating is that after the vice presidential debate, students were amazed. They said, I didn't even know that a debate could sound like this because there can be a substantive discussion of issues. They also pointed to the fact that there were these moments in which both vice presidential candidates were saying, you know, I agree with you on that. And they said that was really actually heartening to them to recognize that perhaps there could be moments of U.S. policy in which candidates agree. And they said, I wish we could see more of that.
And then, no surprise, politics can feel like a very negative thing anytime. I think now more so than usual, polarization, cynicism. How do your students talk about that?
They're concerned about it and they're frustrated about it. And if there is one thing that is contributing to this sense of political fatigue, it is that polarization. But the other thing that I would say is I am heartened by the desire they have to understand, the skills that they're learning in the class and that they just bring to the class already of how to be thoughtful listeners, how to engage with the discourse in a thoughtful, critical way, and to also express what they want to see differently about the discourse and what they would like the candidates to do to change the political environment.
We're talking about student perspectives on the election with Allison Prash, professor of rhetoric and politics at UW-Madison. She's teaching a class this semester about presidential rhetoric. Now, we asked students about their top issues this election season. A few different themes emerge. Let's start with one from Violet.
I feel like there's just so much on the line. Like, to be honest, my top issue is just making sure that democracy stays in place. I mean, I just think that should be like at the center of it all, because no other issues matter if we're not living in a functioning democracy, I feel like.
And Violet, I understand, wasn't the only one who offered that as their main concern. How do you see your students, hear your students talking about that?
You know, I would go back to the fact that for them, the political norms are very different than we might think of them in other generations. And so we have had clear discussions about what various candidates say about the state of democracy, the future of democracy, and what both candidates represent to various voters. And so it is something that's top of mind, specifically if you think about January 6th and the implications of that. And for those students who in 2020, you know, were perhaps in high school, that's something that's really concerning to them.
Is that something that's going to be their first big political memory, January 6th? For some students, anyway?
I think so. I also did a survey of students to say, what's your earliest political memory? And almost across the board, students would talk about the mock elections they maybe did in first or second grade and having real clear memories of those elections. And so what I talk with my students about is that those early political memories, whether that's in kindergarten, casting your you know, pretend ballot, or if it's these moments of national trauma and uncertainty, that really does shape how voters will approach this election and the candidates that they're interested in voting for.
Getting back to your students now, reproductive rights are a big issue this election season. Here's what we heard from Hannah and Madeline from Minneapolis.
Probably abortion rights, because as a female, I think it's important to value not just for us, but also our mothers and then our kids later on.
Yeah, I agree. I think abortion rights and just human rights in general are a huge issue and very important in this election year, especially with the candidates that are up for this year. Yeah.
I understand, Allison, earlier this week you polled the students to ask them about what the term abortion means to them. What kind of things did you hear?
Well, we had that conversation because what I was trying to emphasize for students is when we say the word abortion, it's about so many other things beyond just the word abortion. A lot of students are talking about the freedom to make choices for their own bodies and their futures. Students also talk about the tension between religious conviction and the ability to make those choices. There's concern about access to health care, and also the idea of you know, what is the government's role in making decisions for individuals in all areas of life beyond the issue of abortion? But what is striking to me is that students, I think, if we're going to talk about first political memories, it could be January 6th, but it also could be the overturning of Roe v. Wade and what that means in very practical terms and very personal terms for many students. And that is viscerally felt with students in my class.
College campuses around the country, including UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee, have seen students demonstrating to express their support for Palestine. We got a message from a student named Summer, who we didn't get a chance to record. We've got that message read by our producer, Rochelle.
As a Palestinian-American student, I'm deeply discouraged by the 2024 presidential election due to the ongoing genocide in Palestine, in which U.S. leadership continues to be complicit. The silence from U.S. leaders has left many of us questioning our place as voters. Until Vice President Harris addresses the atrocities in Gaza, I and others like me will remain uncommitted. We hope our voices will be heard in the fight for justice and human rights.
Another contentious issue for sure. How has your class been talking and thinking about the war in Gaza?
Well, is that, you know, example demonstrates this is a deeply personal issue to many students, and it's a difficult one to talk through because you have, yes, voices of Palestinian American students, you have a large population of Jewish students on campus, and so it is a really difficult issue. The way that I've chosen to approach it in my class is, again, to talk about the nuance and the complexity. I think it's easy to see issues as simple, and we know that it's much more complex. But I think what that student is expressing is the fact that there hasn't been much discussion by either candidate about the specifics of what they might do to bring about a ceasefire. And we know, especially in younger college voters, this is something that is of deep concern.
Is this fitting into that theme we mentioned earlier of your students being hungry for more detail on any issue, more substantive detail on any issue?
It is. It is. And I think, you know, if we're going to have a conversation more broadly about what this individual experience or this classroom tells us more broadly about college voters, I think one of the things is that politicians underestimate the information they want, their desire to be politically active, and their understanding that key issues such as climate change or reproductive rights or the war in Gaza, these are deeply felt issues by college students, and they are hungry for more information because they're recognizing the significance of voting for the first time and what that means to them.
Another student we heard from, Dylan in Fort Lauderdale, who said his top issue is fixing what he sees as a broken political system. He said his other top issues are climate change and gun violence. Here's a listen.
I've grown up in a generation that has had to do active shooter drills and has had to stare down intensifying hurricanes and intensifying storms. And Donald Trump calls climate change a hoax.
Those are often cited as big issues for Gen Z. How do you see this impacting their view of the presidential race?
It's something that is deeply concerning to them. And again, one of the conversations I had with my students after the presidential debate is how frustrated they were that there wasn't a substantive discussion about climate change or really an acknowledgement of it. And I think if we're thinking about political fatigue, one of the things that's interesting to these student discussions is the fact that they are frustrated and angry, not just by the candidates, but also other people in positions of political power who they say, you're out of touch with the real issues that we're going to have to live through and that are going to affect our lives and our children's lives. And really this this uncertainty if their futures are seen and held in the same importance that previous generations' futures have been.
Staying with that generational concern, we asked students what they wish politicians and the public knew about Gen Z. And a common theme our producers found was that they don't feel as politically extreme as they're sometimes portrayed to be. Here's a student named Anna.
People should know that we are out there, but we're not quite as far out there as they think. We still want human rights, too. It's not like we're crazy voting for aliens.
The way Gen Z perceives other generations as perceiving them. What do you see there?
That's a great question. I think what I see in my classroom and in these small group discussions with students is kind of a frustration with maybe the assumption that all the news they get are these individual bits and pieces or that they're not really engaged. And so I think it expresses this real frustration that they don't have a voice or they don't have insight. And in fact, I'm learning from them every day.
staying with what they want from politicians. Lily from Watertown, we'll give a listen, says getting back to civil dialogue is her top political issue.
I think for me, it's just getting back to a place where we're able to compromise and just coexist with each other across political lines. I feel like today everyone's politics are part of their identity, which is totally fine, but I think people are getting very defensive and are unwilling to kind of have conversations across the board with that. So I really want to see a step towards compromise is really big for me.
Lily, putting her finger on a pulse there, I hear that from a lot of longtime political watchdogs, the idea that our politics has become, as Lily said, part of our identity, and we're on Team A or Team B here. Pretty perceptive from your student there.
It is. And it's, you know, it speaks to, I think, the broad polarization, but almost this description of political identity, specifically here in the United States, as a team sport. And there is someone who wins and someone who loses. And I think we are all at a disservice when we approach it that way. I think that's one of the reasons, again, that my students were so excited, quite frankly, to listen to the vice presidential debate and to realize that maybe there could be points of connection or agreement. Because again, I think if their only political understanding has been the last 8 years or 10 years where polarization has rapidly increased, they're tired of that. And they're also thinking about, is this going to be my political reality for the next 50 years? I don't want to live in this environment.
People around the state might listen and hear a class at UW-Madison and think, well, this is going to be a bunch of far-left students. What do you see?
It's not. One of the things I've done very strategically in the class is done many anonymous surveys. And so students, they can do it on their phone or their laptop during class and ask them what they think about particular issues. And we have a pretty even demographic of students who lean, you know, more liberal, more conservative. They're very active at expressing their voices. I do it anonymously most often because I want to make sure that students feel welcome to engage in debate and share those issues, but it's pretty representative across the board.
The election is coming up next week. No matter what the results, there's going to be emotions. People are going to be happy, sad, devastated, I don't know, or we might not know a result in key races by the time that next class happens. What is your plan for the first class after Election Day?
So our first class after Election Day will be on that Thursday, okay, November 7th. So our plan is to, you know, obviously I'll be asking them to watch the results of the election. And depending on if we know results, if we have, you know, state by state or more nationally, we'll talk about the discourse that is shaping our understanding of the election and its significance. If we don't have, you know, a declared winner by then, what I'll ask them to do over the weekend is to think about how that makes them feel as voters, how politicians are talking about it, how the candidates are trying to frame or shape the message. Because again, the goal in our class is to help them analyze how these messages are curated for a larger audience and then the ethics of how that happens.
Allison, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Allison Prash, Associate Professor of Rhetoric, Politics, and Culture in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. We've been talking about her class on presidential rhetoric this semester and the issues that matter to Gen Z students, many of whom will be voting for the first time this year, plus how any of us can look at and think about campaign rhetoric as we head toward Election Day.